I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, we've all seen it for ourselves, online social media platforms spreading hate and disinformation. But there are even darker corners of the web that are much worse. They're using that hate and disinformation to groom young men to become mass shooters and domestic terrorists. Social media platforms like 4chan, 8chan, and a subculture on Telegram dubbed Terrorgram have played a troubling role in the radicalization of violent white supremacists. Mass shooters, such as the perpetrators in Christchurch, El Paso, San Diego Poway Synagogue, and the Allen, Texas Mall shooting, all have connections to these online spaces, where anonymous users share manifestos, violent memes, and propaganda aimed at promoting a race war. PBS Frontline and ProPublica investigate these sites, how they operate, and how they can be shut down. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A new investigative collaborative from Frontline and ProPublica shines a light on one of the darkest corners of the web, the transnational online network of extremists accused of inciting acts of white supremacist terrorism on the messaging platform Telegram. They call themselves Terrorgram, and they use their leadership of the terror, and they call their leadership the Terrorgram Collective. Many of the worst mass shootings around the world have a connection to Terrorgram and its predecessors on 4chan, 8chan. These online platforms like Telegram, the leaders of SHIP say that they are taking steps to remove the so-called problematic content and that calls for violence from any groups are not tolerated. But an investigation from Frontline and ProPublica show that there is a long history of these hate-filled posts that do spread violent extremism. Rejoined by the reporters that led the team that made the new Frontline documentary, The Rise and Fall of Terrorgram. A.C. Thompson, welcome back to The Source, A.C.
Hey, thanks. Great to be back.
And also with us is James Bandler. And James, welcome to The Source.
David, great to be here.
So, AC, frequently after these mass shootings, we hear there's been an investigation and these shooters were not, they were a lone wolf, that they were not part of any sort of big group. But you're showing us that the phrase not a lone wolf is probably not accurate.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, that term is the one that always comes up. But what you find when you dig into these cases and you really look closely is that typically these terrorists, these mass shooters and mass killers come from an online community of like-minded people who incite, encourage, and supply them oftentimes with targeting information and how-to guides on how to do terrorism. So these are people who are acting out the will of a broader community. They just happen to be doing it in the real world, typically on their own. But when they're online, they are back engaging with that community that is inciting them.
And James, you write that some of these people were groomed, that they were groomed on these online platforms. Tell me about that.
I mean, what we've seen is that this isn't just, you know, someone reading a manual. It's someone being pushed to go out and do these things, being encouraged to go out and kill people. So there's a process that can go on for months, even years, of getting someone to move from, you know, thinking violent thoughts and wanting to do violent things to taking action.
So they get people to be, it's funny, these are memes, we're telling jokes, and then they start getting them excited. And then what, James?
Well, there's a whole sort of process of radicalization that happens, and it can start with, you know, watching funny, clever videos that are making fun of minority groups, progress to much more aggressive and dark propaganda that these groups are threatening your survival, your life. And then if you're in these channels, you might be guided to instruction manuals on how to blow things up or how to do assassinations. And then eventually there's discussion in secret chats of targeting and of going out and actually taking action, be it attacking a gay bar or going out to try to assassinate a political leader or government official.
But A.C. Thompson, you talk about like the person Dallas Humber.
Yeah.
And she was very manipulative. Seems like they're saying, well, if you believe this, take action. It's okay. It doesn't mean anything. Rallies don't mean anything. You have to go out and strike.
Yeah. I mean, so those quotes actually come from a different person in the Telegram scene, but I'll come back to Dallas in a second. You know, a classic case that we looked at here was a 16-year-old teenager in Slovakia in Central Europe. He comes to Telegram and he's already angry. He's already racist. He's having a lot of trouble in school. He's being bullied. But when he gets onto Telegram, he says, well, maybe we should have a white nationalist rally. And people say, no, we're not going to do that. That doesn't do anything. You need to start killing people. And he quickly gets into that mind frame. And people are sending him ideas, constantly sharing ideas about how to do terrorist attacks, who to kill, what to do. And they start talking about attacking the LGBTQ bar that he will eventually go attack 3 years before he does it. And people are saying, we should bomb it. We should poison those people. We should beat up gay and lesbian people. This is the messaging that he's getting. And eventually he gets into a chat on Telegram with Dallas Humber, who is a California-based woman who's now been indicted by the US government on a bunch of different terrorism-related charges. And she's constantly pushing this message as well. Go out and kill people. If you kill people, you will be remembered forever. You will ascend. You will be part of our pantheon of what we call in this scene, saints, white supremacist terrorists. So do it, you know, and that's her message.
And that works. I mean, these people, you don't think they would otherwise be drawn towards these violent extremism, James?
I mean, it's hard to know what's going to trigger what's the ultimate trigger to cause someone to do something really awful. But I think stewing in this sea of very vile propaganda can warp a mind and can cause someone to become desensitized to violence and cause someone to, you know, think, you know, if I've had these violent thoughts, this is a way I can get recognition that I would never have gotten from friends or anywhere else, and I can do something and become important.
Well, because they're celebrated. They're elevated on these platforms.
So, yeah, one of the most disturbing films that Dallas Humber helped create was a documentary called, and I say documentary in quotes, called White Terror, which was just a pastiche of awful, violent mass murders, mostly against minority people or gay and lesbian people. And this film celebrates each killer as a saint. 105 sort of mass shootings, starting with Dr. Martin Luther King's killing and going up to 2019. It's after you watch it, if a young troubled person could see this and think, this is my way to a path to recognition, to fame, and in these guys' minds, sainthood.
We're going to continue talking about the new Frontline documentary that airs tonight, The Rise and Fall of Terrorgram. It airs on PBS in San Antonio at 9 Central. Also, it'll be available to stream on YouTube and the PBS app and on Frontline's website beginning this evening as well. If you got a question or a comment, you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK. We are making references. We're talking about extreme acts of violence, homophobia, anti-Semitism, racism, mass shootings. This is a conversation that has to be had, but I wanted to let you know that that's going to be what we're talking about. Call in if you've got a question or comment, 833-877-8255. The source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a new documentary that airs tonight on PBS Frontline, The Rise and Fall of Terrorgram, about these online channels that really stoke people to do violent acts. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call, 833-TPR-TALK. A.C. Thompson, let me ask you about who they celebrate. I wonder, when you talked about that video that they had made, A White Terror, and they talk about all the great people that, you know, they think that did these shootings, do they include Devin Patrick Kelly, who did the Sutherland Springs shooting?
You know, I don't think he's in there, that Texas attack. The kind of people we're talking about, I actually need to go look now and double check. But, you know, like James said, there's the assassins, like the assassin of Martin Luther King. There is people like Tim McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber who killed almost 200 people with a bomb. There are people like Peyton Gendron, who's very much came out of this online neo-Nazi scene, who killed 10 Black Americans in a supermarket in 2022 in Buffalo, New York. And so it spans, you know, these heroes for this contingent of online extremists go back decades.
And it's a motley crew. I mean, you have also Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, who, you know, was blowing up scientists and researchers in an environmental quest. So it's a weird mix, but mostly most of the folks listed are in the white supremacist realm.
And they look down on the shooter at the San Diego Poway synagogue.
They see Yeah, that was a fascinating thing for us to read, because when we were reading these Terrorgram chats, there's all this discussion about the merits of the various different white terrorists, you know, who did it the best, who had the most effect. And they started developing a real methodology. And part of it was propaganda should go along with your horrible deed. Are you creating propaganda that's going to reach lots of people, whether that's a streaming video of your attack, whether that's a manifesto, whether that's something else? And they gamified it. So, you know, the person who killed the most people, who got the high score, was the most highly regarded. If you were someone like John T. Ernest in San Diego County, California, who killed one person at a synagogue, then you were looked down on as something of a failure.
I do want to mention that it was Oscar Stewart who stopped that shooter. He was unarmed, and he just ran at him and scared him and forced him out of the synagogue and allowed him to be apprehended. It was just, I love that story about Oscar Stewart, a San Antonio guy who was there who did that.
And then there, as AC said, they're the archangels, the people, you know, who kill the most. And, you know, in this very dark and ugly pantheon, you know, they consider the Christchurch shooter
in New Tarrant, Zealand.
Yeah, in New Zealand, sort of the leader.
Right. He was the template that they want to follow.
Right. So that was 2019 in New Zealand, Brenton Tarrant, who attacked two mosques and killed many, many people there. We went to the mosque he attacked. We met people that he shot. And he really gave this sort of, in this gamified space where you're thinking about who has the high score. And high score is a term that these people use in their chats. Brenton Tarrant was someone who really stood out for them. And like you said, Dave, became a template.
So I had a caller dropped off. Aaron asked the question, do these people who are radicalized, do they have a political point of view? Would they fall into any particular political party?
I mean, that's, It's really interesting, and it's a great question. And I hadn't heard of this term, but AC had been, when we started this early last year, a lot of these people call themselves accelerationists, in that they want to speed up the collapse of Western democracies, and they believe that by triggering a race war, by triggering chaos, by taking down the power grid, they can speed up the collapse of these multicultural, pluralistic democracies, which they hope will be replaced by, you know, a white fascistic ethnostate. So I think this Terragram ecosystem, which we were studying, really, that's a term that would fit for them and that they would embrace as accelerationists.
AC, would the El Paso shooting, would that fall into that category?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the El Paso shooter is somebody that is very much, very highly regarded in this world. His manifesto, everything about him has been circulated throughout this group, the Terragram community, and he had been praised as one of their saints. You know, he is absolutely part of this elevated pantheon of people who have done horrible deeds.
So he was apprehended. He's incarcerated. Do the people online, do they want the people who commit these shootings to be, you know, die on the spot or to go to prison or to be executed? What do they want?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's really like what they want them to do is an effective act of terrorism coupled with an effective act of propaganda. So if that ends with you committing suicide in some, you know, supposedly valiant and heroic way, then that's great. If that ends with you in court, you know, speaking your propagandistic truth, then that's great. If that ends with you in some way that you are furthering this agenda, that's what they want. But the main focus is on the deed and that propaganda that accompanies it immediately.
It's almost a trope now, James, that you could these crimes come with a manifesto. What's in a manifesto? I've never read one.
A manifesto is sort of a personal explanation for why you did this, how you got here, but also it provides sort of the ideological framework for this act of violence. And it'll often extend an homage to past shooters. It's a very, some of these are very well-written. Some of them are almost caveman-like in their prose. But almost all of these shootings have that telltale sign of this is why I did it, and this is you should follow me afterwards.
And AC, these manifestos, they become popular on these platforms?
Oh, this is one of the big sort of items that you see circulated in a major way. What you'll see are the manifesto posted and reposted and reposted. You'll see, you know, Dallas Humber, the California woman who was indicted and is facing charges as part of the Terragram Collective, she would turn them into audiobooks. And so then she would post an audio file in the Terragram channels and share them with her followers. And they would get circulated that way. You see what they call the saint card. And that's like a graphic that accompanies the information about the shooter. So there'll be a photo of the shooter, information about their so-called big day or day of action, the details about the people they killed, typically racial slurs or other slurs about the people they killed, and then incitement to be like that person and go out and do the same thing.
AC, tell the story about what happened when the sheriff in Jacksonville posted the Ryan Pometer's manifesto, and tell a little bit about that story.
Yeah, so Dave, like one of the cases that we followed a lot was a racially motivated shooting in Jacksonville, Florida. There was a young white man named Ryan Pometer. He went to a dollar store, killed three people there, and he wrote up a manifesto, which was eventually released by the sheriff there and posted online in, you know, basically the sheriff said, I'm trying to be transparent here. He said, this is awful material. It's horribly racist and stupid, but I'm going to post it so you know what this guy was thinking.
Do you really need to post the manifesto to do that? He uses the N-word 183 times.
Yeah, and what he says is like actually like it's highly focused on specific ways to kill Black Americans. But so yeah, he posted it, and then it was immediately picked up by Dallas Humber and other Telegrammers and turned into this sort of iconic document and circulated through that group.
So that happened on January 19th, 2024. I mean, recently. Wouldn't law enforcement by now have some instructions on best practices on how to deal with this kind of thing to not promote these killers?
Yeah, it's definitely, I think it's interesting to us because when we went to New Zealand, the take is totally different. In New Zealand, they say, we're not going to mention the terrorist's name. He doesn't have a name. We don't use it. We just call him the terrorist. We are doing everything we can to focus on victims, focus on healing, focus on the problems that led to the, you know, the breakdowns that led to this person being able to do this attack. But we are not giving him any acknowledgement.
Let's go to a caller. I'm going to go to this caller, Randall. And Randall, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot. This thing is called Rise and Fall, suggesting that this Telegram thing was taken down one way or another. Talk about the process of embedding into this environment. How difficult was that? How much preparation did you have to do? And I can't help but think about all of this in light of yesterday's bombshell from the Atlantic and wonder if the self-proclaimed leaders on this platform are maybe all that savvy about the security flaws in their messaging platforms of choice.
All right, Randall, thank you for that. AC, you've been doing this for years and years and years, so you've been embedded for a while. But you know, what is that process like?
Yeah, so there's I should hit on the fall. So most of these channels, and there were hundreds and hundreds of them, have been taken down, and a significant number of the people who are key actors in this group and in this community have been arrested in multiple different countries. But as far as embedding goes, you know, this is basically works in a couple different ways. You have on Telegram, you have open chats, and you have open channels, which are basically like a Facebook page or a Twitter profile. And then you have private, more secure chats and channels where you have to do more work to enter. And for us, we wanted to be in both the public stuff and in the private stuff. And I'll tell you know, embedding into these kind of communities was really, really eye-opening, because you could see the messaging being shared. You could see the bomb manuals being shared. You could see the discussion about we should collect radiological material and set off a dirty bomb. You could see people changing. And then at times you could connect them back to real life individuals. And the OPSEC question is a good one because that's how some of these people have been exposed, is that their security and their you know, ability to keep their online life separate from their offline life was not very good.
And James, how did you infiltrate?
So I leave most of those intrepid actions to AC. I'm a timid man. So I was in a lot of these channels, but I was not engaging with any of these people. I just was watching, so lurking, and you know, not getting kicked out. But I leave that for the bold reporters.
Let me ask you about that collection of radioactive material, AC. Is that a problem? Is that something I should be worrying about?
I would be worried about everything, and not to be like super, you know, not to be cat, you know, a catastrophist, but I would be worried about any type of bomb threat, sabotage threat, and shooting threat, because it is just simply fairly easy to get materials to do these crimes, whether, you know, the radiological material is the hardest to get. So I'd be like maybe less concerned about that. But there have been definitely reports from serious journalists and from government agencies saying we need to tighten up security on radioactive material.
We're taking a break. We're going to come back, continue our conversation, talking about the rise and fall of Telegram. We're going to get more into the workings of Telegram and how it was taken down. It is a Frontline documentary on PBS. It airs tonight at 9 o'clock locally. It'll be available online this evening as well. And you can call in with your questions and comments as we talk to the two reporters who led the team that worked on this, A.C. Thompson and James Bandler. And The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Over the last two decades, we've all seen how social media networks like X, Twitter, Facebook, and Telegram, they've emerged as powerful tools for connecting like-minded strangers, usually for good purposes, to talk about anime and fun things. But there's also a darker side of the story. It can be used to connect people who are extremist. They have a brutal view of the world, and they want to harm other people. And part of that story is Terrorgram. We're talking about that this afternoon. A new documentary airs tonight called The Rise and Fall of Terrorgram. And we're joined by the two reporters that led a team of reporters working on this from Frontline and ProPublica, A.C. Thompson and James Bandler. If you've got a question or a comment, you can give us a call, 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. So, James Bandler, what is so special about Terrorgram? I mean, they've Stormfront's been around for a long time. They're sharing all sorts of, you know, wacky ideas there. Why do they need Terrorgram?
Well, I think Terrorgram was special because partly because of the platform it was operating on, Telegram, which really gave them an ability to reach across oceans to find, you know, like-minded people who were interested not just in white supremacist ideology, but in taking action. And you didn't need to have a huge audience. You just needed to find, you know, a few of the right people. And what was really great for them about Telegram was you had this ability to share huge video files, these huge instruction manuals, as much content almost as you could produce. And then you could broadcast, as AC said, in these very different ways, these big channels with, you know, huge audiences, or in these smaller groups where you could really be together with the people you wanted to be with. So it was partly a function of that they found, you know, the right platform. It was also a bunch of people with artistic savvy who had, you know, the ability to make very arresting graphical zine-like books and entertaining things, and then also this sort of multimedia video skills, which sort of made their work seem much more potent and visceral and hit people with emotion. So, you know, they're really part of a continuum of white supremacist propaganda, and it's just sort of taking it to the next step with this very effective tool, meaning Telegram, to promote these ideas.
A.C. Thompson, y'all report that there's about 1 billion users of Telegram around the world. How many of them are actually going into the Terrorgram-ish type locations? And you show how a lot of this stuff is interconnected. And what is all that about?
Right. So you know, with 1 billion people, nearly 1 billion people on the platform, we're talking about a very, very, very small subset of people on the platform. You know, I think the biggest channel that we were informed about had about 24,000 people in it. And we're really talking about a network of hundreds of chats and channels, some of them with thousands of followers, some of them with a couple hundred or a couple dozen. And the way these things work is that somebody like Matthew Allison from Boise, Idaho, who James really reported very extensively on, would create a channel, and he would call it BTC, Ban This Channel. And he would put up things that just simply were very unlikely to stay on other social media platforms, you know, outright overt calls for murder. And eventually someone would report that. Eventually Telegram would take down the channel, and then he would just start a new one that would be called BTC2 or BTC3, Ban This Channel 3, Ban This Channel 4, Ban This Channel 5. And it went on and on like that for 5 years. And so over the span of 5 years, the people in the Telegram community took only very modest, minor steps to reboot when they were eventually shut down, when their accounts were deleted. They would basically restart them with a version of the same exact name. Eventually, after all the criminal cases started coming out, and there we tracked 35 different criminal cases that spun out of the Telegram scene, Telegram started taking steps to really more forcefully shut down this community. But it took basically 5 years.
Well, not to give away the story, the spoiler, but Telegram is eventually declared a terrorist group. So, James, how does that happen? How do you declare an online channel a terrorist group?
Well, I think law enforcement got really worried about this group. And what we think our reporting shows that sort of prompted it was they published something called The List, which prosecutors now say was a hit list. And if it wasn't a hit list, it was pretty poorly disguised because it had names of targets, a picture of an AR assault weapon, home addresses. It had all sorts of information that could lead someone to want to go kill these people.
And so this is an assassination list.
This is a list that prosecutors say was an assassination list of government officials, prosecutor, judge, writers, most of whom were either minorities, Jews, or gay, lesbian, or trans people. But people who the collective viewed worthy of being targeted. Now, I think that when you put federal officials in your crosshairs, the FBI is going to be very concerned.
You, James, actually got to sit down and talk with Matthew Allison when he was in prison, in jail. So what happened?
Well, Allison was really a very curious and perplexing case for us because we had known about him by his Telegram handle, which was BTC, Ban This Channel, which is that sort of taunting handle he'd had going back to his days on YouTube.
And now it stands for Bitcoin, so, there you go.
Yeah, bulk, exactly. There's a lot of BTCs out there now. But when he was arrested, we learned quickly that he was a DJ in Boise, Idaho, a struggling music producer who was mostly making a living from service worker jobs, convenience stores, restaurants. And what was really surprising when we went and talked to people was how he's a very likable, amiable guy. He was not your sort of typical guy.
You're glazing over the key point. He was an out gay man.
He was an out gay man. And he was in a long-term relationship, which his friends thought was, that he was in love and his partner was in love.
And so the irony is that he was advocating for the extermination of homosexuals.
He was indeed. And he was celebrating.
Allegedly.
He was celebrating the murders of gay people. And he was helping anoint these folks, at least one person, as a saint. So that was the most strange part of this thing. And when we shared his mugshot with a friend saying, they were like, this is impossible. That couldn't be. Not Matt Allison. He's gay. Why would he do that? No, he's the furthest thing from a terrorist.
So that did was you really ask him surprising. That? It's like,
yeah,
it's like,
I mean,
Matt, dude, what's person, going on here, bro?
He couldn't really explain it. His persona in prison was similar to the one friends described, which was friendly, amiable. He said he didn't hate anyone. He was not a terrorist. He wasn't inciting people to kill. He said he was documenting as an artist the world the way he saw it. And it was a very strange pair of interviews with him, because you have this person posting very dark, hateful stuff, and then this sort of sunny, individual sitting in front of you. It was one of the most bizarre and disturbing.
So he's also as an artist like Banksy. You just don't sign your art. You know, he's an anonymous artist. I mean, why didn't he come out and tell the world? Why was he out? You know,
well, as he said, he couldn't tell his friends on Telegram that he was gay because they, you know, they don't like gay people. So he knew that, you know, these guys were talking about on Telegram always about their fear of arrest and the feds lurking and watching. So, you know, I think he's going to have he's taking a First Amendment line that this was all protected free speech. Everything on Telegram was protected free speech. I think that could be a difficult road for him.
Even though, you know, U.S. prosecutors have linked him to the gay bar shooting, right? In Sarajevo.
Yes.
And so it's an international crime. He could be prosecuted elsewhere, right?
You know, one of the most interesting things to us as we were reporting, and we were in Slovakia, we identified the communications between the terrorist who attacked the LGBTQ bar there and killed two people and injured another. And then these communications with people in America like Matt Allison and Dallas Humber. And as we were talking to the authorities there, one of the things that became clear is that they were unaware of these communications. They were unaware that the place had been staked out for years. And they did not realize that there were potentially Americans who were involved in this plot. Or I should say, they thought there might be Americans involved in this plot, but they did not have names or were unable to ID these people and didn't have access to the back and forth communication that suggested there had been something more than a lone actor.
We're taking a break here. Our conversation continues. You've got a question, give us a call, 833-877-8255. The Source continues in 1 minute. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Tonight on KLRN and PBS nationally, The Rise and Fall of Terrorgram will air, the latest documentary from Frontline and ProPublica. It'll also be available online for streaming later today on YouTube, PBS app, and Frontline's website. If you've got a question, give us a call, 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. It does seem to be, A.C. Thompson, kind of is it a legal gray area about, like, this is free speech? Can you do this? I'm just being an artist. Did these people really know what they were doing? It does seem like Dallas Humber knew exactly what she was all about. And was she a true believer in the online neo-Nazi world?
Oh, from everything I can see, she and her colleagues were very much true believers, and they very much felt like, this is our way forward. We are using this decentralized messaging platform to incite acts of terrorism all around the world. And we can do this in a way in which we think that we are legally protected, or it's hard for us to be traced and identified. And we'll be able to keep doing it month after month, year after year. And I really think that they thought, you know, they would say, we're not going to form a real world group and call it the neo-Nazi awful division Mark III. We're going to have this online group, and we're going to inspire people to go out as individuals or very, very small cells and do these horrible acts. And that way, we will never get busted. Unfortunately for them, it turned out that that didn't work, and they were eventually apprehended in multiple different countries. What you see in the charging documents is the federal government is saying, you were soliciting acts of murder. That is a crime. And I think that may be a hard, I think that may be a charge that sticks in court. We'll see.
I mean, it's funny because Allison told me, and I thought this was really curious, that he was, you know, they were very careful online, and that he was familiar with the case Brandenburg versus Ohio, which is this very groundbreaking case about free speech and sort of what constitutes legal speech. And, you know, the court has held that You can talk about violence. You can talk about sabotage. You can do these things as long as it's not directed at inciting or producing imminent lawless action and likely to incite or produce such action. So they were familiar with this case law, but I think that when you're online and you're posting and you're engaging with someone who's contemplating an act, you may not have your case law right in front of you always. And so I think, you know, good luck to him. I mean, this case is still going forward.
AC, the Poway synagogue shooting, the shooter, he seemed like he was just a normie, but he got into this brainwashed world.
Yeah, our sense with him, and we interviewed his father, is that he had spent a bunch of time on YouTube at a time when YouTube was much less heavily moderated than it is now, when there was a lot more extremist content on it, that he moved from YouTube onto 8chan and 4chan, which are message boards that have been a haven for white supremacists for many years, and that he learned about this whole scene of white supremacist neo-Nazi killers on those platforms, went out and did his crime, and used 8chan to broadcast it. And what we found after that is this whole process happened very, very quickly. You know, we're talking about a year to 18 months of being deep in these internet rabbit holes. And on the other end of it, you have a terrorist. What he sort of was one of these people that helped set off this transition to people moving on to Telegram. Because as a result of the string of killings that were really celebrated on 8chan and broadcast on 8chan and 4chan, those platforms started moderating more tightly. And people who were excited about people like the Poway killer started moving on to Telegram.
And James, y'all found things on these sites that the moderators said that they had removed. Is it because these sites are so large and huge and impossible to you know, totally police that these things are ever always going to be there?
Well, I think Telegram has done a much more aggressive job taking content down than it had in the past. And, you know, we can talk about the reasons for that, but it is a huge, huge site. And then they also had just both, you know, this had been their part of their marketing, that this is a sort of unfettered free speech zone.
Is it their business model?
It really was the business model for a long time. And they've always said that they take down illegal content, but it really, they were selective about it. And it wasn't really until the past year that really they went after Telegram, you know, with tongs, and just like the stuff started to really disappear.
And
late last year.
AC, so how hard is it to track really these sites? I mean, can't law enforcement do a better job? Can AI comb through practically everything and monitor things and highlight things that are worth looking at?
You know, I mean, one of the interesting things that we've been hearing from Telegram is as they've stepped up their moderation, they're trying to use technological fixes to that in a lot of ways, using engineering fixes and AI and so forth. But really, you're talking about a problem of scale. And if you want to moderate dangerous terrorist content and you're concerned about, say, bomb making manuals or 3D printing, files for 3D printing guns, you have a lot of work to do. You need a lot of resources when you're, you know, monitoring a platform with almost a billion people on it.
We I guess it was about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, we saw a lot of things happening at power stations around the United States. Was that connected to this? I mean, certainly there's information about how to do that that's available on these locations.
Yeah, that's a great question. So that's still an open question, frankly. Like, and it's one that James and I spent a really, really long time exploring. These attacks that happened where people were shutting down electrical substations around the country, were, first off, they were discussed on Telegram how to do it. They were encouraged on Telegram, go out and do it over and over again. And then when they happened, they were celebrated on Telegram. And at times it sounded like some of these groups operating on Telegram were taking responsibility. So far though, aside from plots that have been thwarted by law enforcement, we haven't been able to make a clear connection between any of these attacks and the terrorists hanging out on Telegram.
James, the story that y'all tell feels far away and very close at the same time. I mean, I don't go to these sites. I don't know about these things. Yet, when these outbreaks of violence happen, they're upsetting to me. And then you realize some of these outbreaks of violence, some of these mass shootings have happened not far from where I am, and I have covered them. So it's these two things happening simultaneously. What do you want us to be thinking about? How real is these, are these Telegram-ish type locations on the web? How relevant are they to me?
Well, I think obviously most of us are not going to be directly affected by a mass shooting. But I think what you have to think about is just how in this very interconnected world of powerful social media platforms, how fast messaging can spread, very virulent messaging that can reach, you know, across the world to influence minds. And it's in this sense a much smaller world than, you know, than we imagine. And I think when you have this kind of speech where it's not just, you know, racist, it's not just violent, it's basically go out and do these things, become a saint, it hits people. And though Telegram may not really exist right now as a vibrant ecosystem, it's been pretty much shut down, the ideas behind it still live, you know, online.
And what about leakage into regular online things like X and Facebook and all that? One day you're laughing at some offensive meme, and maybe the next day, AC, you're marching around in khaki pants with a tiki torch yelling, "Jews will not replace us."
Yeah, I think, you know, after covering this beat for so long, I can see this full circle now, you know. And so 2015, 2016, there was a lot of extremist, racist, white supremacist content on the mainstream social media platforms. Eventually, there was a lot of moderation and most of it went away. I think the thing that concerns me now is with the mainstream platforms, we're seeing a lot of that coming back, and that is very concerning.
Well, are you concerned about how these U.S. intel groups are seem to be being dismantled now that should be monitoring this?
Yeah, I think that we should be concerned about the work to, you know, keep people, to, you know, basically de-radicalize people and keep people from getting into radical extremism. We should be worried about prosecutions of these types of cases. And I think we should be worried about the resources going into monitoring these types of communications that are not about, you know, political discussion, but are about plotting to kill people.
Yeah, violence against innocent people who did nothing to anyone. AC Thompson, James Bandler, welcome. Thank you so much for talking to us today. The documentary Frontline ProPublica is tonight, The Rise and Fall of Telegram. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you, David.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Technical support by Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, and Yvette Benavides. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.